ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Creative. Could anybody else remember something that was said to them that inspired or disempowered? Yes.
Just from the call out is sometimes not the words, but how it comes through. In the instance, which I don't want to repeat, the words seemed totally fine when you look at the words, but in the context and where it was coming from and everything, did have a negative impact on me, which stayed with me for a while. So it's not just the words, how it's said.
Ooh, that's important too. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. So there's a vibration, a quality to the vibration when somebody's speaking it. And I'll get into that in a minute, but it's a very important point. And it also seemed to me you were saying that you realized it later after you'd heard it and had a delayed reaction. Somebody said some words to you, you thought about it the next day or later on, and you realized the impact. My main point here is to bring out the fact that the words we speak and the words we hear from others have a direct impact on our consciousness. So the practice of yam, the first step in the Ashtanga practice of yoga, is to be very careful with how you interact with others and how you speak about yourself as well. So this is the first step, jivado, to control the tongue. And speech is one of the most important parts of the tongue, tongue's function. Have you ever heard the phrase, your word is your bond? Have you heard that? Your word is your bond? Can you think of an instance where that holds true in everyday life? Where when you say something, that you're bound to it after you say it? Well,
I'm making a joke.
Okay. I do. Well, that's not a joke. Yeah, that's a really good one, actually. And we do say that, and it really means something. And there's pomp and circumstance normally around that. We have ceremonies where we come together. In fact, in the state of California, you have to have a witness that heard you say that, heard both parties say that. That's what makes the document legally binding. I've done a lot of weddings, so I know this. And so that has to be said. Not only that, in the state of California, the priest has to say that I now pronounce you man and wife, or whatever it is, whatever the union is, in order for it to be binding. So your word is your bond. Can you think of any other circumstances where your word is your bond, or you've had an experience where you said something and then think of the word bond to hold something together? So when have you ever said something and then you were held to it because you said it?
Like a promise?
Like a promise, yeah. A promise is a big deal. You make a promise, and once you say it, like what kind of promise would you think? I promise I'm going to
be on time.
Be on time. Yeah, now your life changes because you made that promise. You said something, so your word is your bond. It actually has consequences in our life. So in the science of yoga, everything in our life manifests from a subtle level, and then it becomes more and more manifest on a gross level. Speech is very subtle. And when we speak something, then it begins to manifest in our outer world. So our words have consequences. Now, this idea of being bound by words comes out in the Vedas, which is an ancient body of wisdom texts, which seek to help us look inwardly and find our higher selves, to be more mindful. And there's a statement in code form, it says, anavritti shabdat. This is a code which means that complete liberation of the mind comes about through sound. Shabdat means sound. And anavritti means to become uncovered. The idea, the implication is that I get covered, distracted from my highest interest and actually of seeing myself, my conscious self, by the many thoughts that are flowing through my mind, millions of them every day. As if I'm watching a movie, I become transfixed, and I'm moving from one thing to the next, thinking about moving forward into the future or lamenting about the past, but very rarely am I fixed in the moment and actually feeling satisfied and aware of myself. And this is a kind of covering, a covering of thoughts. And these are called vrittis. So this verse I just said from the ancient Vedas says, anavritti. Ana, when you put an A at the beginning, it reverses the meaning. So anavritti. Anavritti, one becomes uncovered and undisturbed through the power of sound. Sound has this great impact. And therefore, when we speak certain kinds of words, a certain kind of language, it binds us. And if you speak another kind of words and make another kind of vibration, you can become freed. You can free your mind. One side there's bondage, you become bound, and the other side you become bound to a higher reality and freed from the lower energy, the lower thought energies, and into a state of mindfulness, which is considered to be our natural state. This is the idea and the commentary behind this verse, anavritti shabdat. So shabdat is the key, it's sound. Sound is a very powerful element, and as humans, we have a lot of discretion about the sounds that we make and the sounds that we let in as well. I've given the example many times about in my neighborhood in Burlingame, there are some storm drains, and on each one there's a placard that says, no dumping drains to bay, and it has a picture of a fish. And one day when I was walking past that, I was thinking about how anything you put in there ends up in the San Francisco Bay. And then later I was thinking about this concept of anavritti shabdat, and whatever sound I put in here, and these are like little storm drains, it ends up in the bay of my heart. There's a repository here inside. I'm collecting those vibrations. They come into me. So remembering that the word, our word is our bond, there are great implications for what I say and how I say it, and also for the kind of sounds that I let in. That's what really regulates my environment. The quality of my life and the quality of is dependent on the quality of my environment. And really, according to the Vedas and the yogic teachings, our environment is really based, the quality of it, on the quality of sound that we're listening to. And speech is so much of that in our lives, what we speak and what we hear others say. I'm going to do one more on the outline. And then I'm going to do something that any of you who have been to any of my talks are used to, and that is reflections. So reflections are really easy. Reflections means anything that you've heard so far, a concept or a phrase that stuck in your mind that you can take out of here with you. And if you get stopped around the corner, someone grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in there? This is the one thing that you'll tell him. Okay? Yes or yes? Okay. Your word is your bond, you know. So, bringing another metaphor for speech, and that is that words are seeds. Think of them as seeds. Whatever words you put out there actually have an effect somewhere. We already proved it anecdotally. We asked all of you to think of a time when you were affected by words. And many of you probably could think back to a time when some words got planted in your heart, in your mind, and then they sprouted into something. Like you heard words of encouragement. It's just a mistake. We all make mistakes, fail forward fast, whatever it is. Next thing you know, you feel empowered. That grew into something. So there's a progression when you put a seed in the ground. After some time, in the right conditions, it will sprout. And it can grow into something that we couldn't have ever imagined and then produce flowers and fruits. So in a similar way, the speech that we use takes a similar progression. A speech helps to create our thoughts, and from the thought world, our actions take place. And it moves in a sequential way. So when we improve the quality of our speech, what we're saying about ourselves, what we're speaking about to others, then the quality of our thoughts also transforms, improves. I'm making, obviously, many cases for the power of sound and the creative nature of speech and how much of an effect it has on our life for empowering us or disempowering us, and how we can actually drastically improve our lives by attending to our speech. And now, as promised, I'll stop for a minute and take some reflections. So reflections are fun and easy, and all you have to do is remember anything that you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind and just reflect it back. Yes?
I think for me, it was a summary of, I can summarize it as words are seeds. Because it grows, it impacts, it can become a forest, or it might not just grow and be a desert.
Yes. And seeds look insignificant at first. If you look at a seed, it looks tiny, insignificant, dry. But in time, with a little attention, it grows into something that is that produces flowers, fruits, and so forth. And so many things manifest in our life from the words that we speak, which are like seeds. What else did you hear? One thought or concept that you're taking away from online, okay?
It's from Arash, and he says that he really liked the storm and the train example. So he wants to reflect that.
Yes. And if I ever get a tattoo, and I won't, but I'll put "no dumping drains to bay" across the side of my, above each ear, each storm drain. It goes into the repository of the heart, and those things accumulate there. There's a cumulative effect on sound. It goes into the heart. Give me three more. Anything that you heard so far that stuck? Yes?
I like that, I guess, yoga and maybe awareness. I guess you said yoga starts with speech or controlling your tongue.
Yes.
The first step.
It is. You know, it's... it's helpful in any process to know where the fulcrum of power is and where if you put your attention that you'll get the best result. It's the old 80-20 rule. And in yoga, because yoga really is to come to mindfulness and to become aware of your higher self. That's why the asanas are there. That's why the pranayama or the breathing is there. And the meditation can't take place, actually. Let's say if you just, for instance, told a lie. Has that ever happened to anybody? Okay, I'll raise my hand. I'll tell you the first time I remember telling a lie and the results of it. Shall I? Shall I be vulnerable and tell you? Okay. I was a kid. And in my family, I grew up with two brothers and a sister. One brother I was very close with. We were at home one day, and my mother had just gone to the store. She would be right back. We had an heirloom instrument in our house. It was a bugle. I heard it came from the Civil War or something like that. It had been passed down through several generations. And we were not to take it outside. That was the admonition. And, you know, we could take it, look at it, but be very careful. Somehow, my brother and I, Tom, took it outside. And we're playing around with it. And I had it in my hands. I left it in the garden. Priceless bugle in the garden. You got the picture, right? So my mom comes home, and she goes out in the backyard and notices that the priceless bugle is planted in the flower bed. And she came out furious, and she said, "Who put the bugle in the garden?" And I knew I did. But I also had an excuse, or not an excuse, but a lie. And that was my friend next door, Denny Scardacci. He was a rascal. He was always doing stuff that he was getting him in trouble. So in the 2 seconds that I had to respond, I was thinking, it sounds reasonable. I'll tell her Denny Scardacci did it. And then I'll be off the hook. And she'll probably believe me because she knows Denny's a rascal. Everybody does. So I said, "Denny did it." "Denny did it?" And she goes, starts walking off to Tenny Scardacci's house across the street. And I remember at that time watching her go across the street. I could see from my vantage point her knocking on the door, Mr. Scardacci opening the door, and I could just imagine the conversation, and I just wish time would stand still at that point. I was thinking, now there's no way out of this. And I was waiting for the repercussion to come back, and it did. And the biggest repercussion was I felt ashamed that I had lied to my mother. And she was very let down and angry that I had done that. And I never forgot it, the feeling that was there within the 30 seconds before she came back across the street, and I had to reckon with that. That's a powerful energy to have to reckon with. If you have such things in your consciousness, you can't meditate. If you sit down and try to be mindful while the energy of a lie is reverberating within your consciousness, and it doesn't have to be immediate either. There's a ripple effect from those kinds of things that come through our consciousness. This is another example in the Ashtanga process called yam. Our ordinary dealings have to be clean, no residual. Otherwise, it sticks in our consciousness, and you can't become mindful. You can't overcome the waves that you created by lying, for instance, and that's by speech. So one has to be careful. That was in response to a reflection, so we still have two more. Two more reflections. Just reflect back anything that you've heard so far that's stuck in your mind. Come on, this is Salesforce. Yes?
For me, the your word is your bond really stuck.
Yes.
In. That one just got me really thinking back on, you know, everything that I've said and that I have followed through on, or maybe some things I haven't, and why, and how it makes me feel, and vice versa for other people that, you know, might not have followed through, or how many people I can rely on. Just got the wheels turning.
Yes. It's a very powerful mantra, just to remember that. I mean, the word bond, it's like bang, and your word is your bond. It's a simple but very profound and true statement. And if you think about it, there are esoteric implications to this, as I've been trying to bring out, the subtle to the gross, and that our speech is creative, and that it means something. When we actually say things, it has meaning, creative meaning. One more. Yes.
When you mentioned bonds, I thought about and thinking what is integrity as well as authenticity other than a sacred contract that we have with ourselves. So for that value, we have to stay true to our inner core, that conversation
yes.
with our inner self. We have to stay honest, otherwise, but it is integrity.
Yes. And how valuable is it? Yes. Were you finished? It's such a nice point, thank you. How valuable is integrity? And what is it anyway? Can you measure it? Is there an integrometer where you can actually measure it, like if you did a scan and you said, here's how much integrity one has? However, it's a real thing. And as you said, you used the word sacred, I could use the word metaphysical, it means above the material. It's not something that you can count like you could count these chairs, but it's as real as anything else, integrity. And this is one of the aspects of the relating to the title, taking conscious control of your life, has to do with tending to our integrity. What level is it at? And when we have that, we have a kind of empowerment that you can't get anywhere else. So much of this has to do with our speech, and you can trace back so many of the situations in which we either gain integrity or we lose it to what we say. Thank you. Good, we did it. We did our reflections for this part. I'm going to do it again in a minute. Okay. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a mention of divisions of speech that one can attend to. So the first one I've already alluded to several times, and that's truthfulness. So these are called the austerities of speech, or using your speech judiciously, so that your consciousness stays clean and actually you feel empowered and full of integrity. So the first thing is tell the truth. So there are a lot of opportunities I've found when somebody asks me a question to embellish. Has this ever happened to you? Someone asks you, you know, how many did you do? How many units? And it was 7, but I just say 10. It's like, I'm thinking, why did I say 10? It was only 7. And truth has to do also with withholding or embellishing. There are many different ways. But if one were to try telling the truth unabashedly, at least when it's not putting somebody else in a situation that would compromise them, their lives or something like that. And in all ordinary circumstances, not an emergency where you need to save somebody's life by telling a non-truth, then what would you do differently, or how would you feel differently in your life? Can any of you imagine such a situation, or can any of you that always tell the truth right now tell us what it feels like to not embellish or hold back anything, either of those? There was a movie with Jim Carrey in which somebody put a spell on him so he could only tell the truth 24 hours a day. Anybody asked him something, because I think before that he was a very unethical kind of a business person, and somebody cursed him, and then, right? Was this a storyline? And then he went on, and all the implications now of telling the truth. Of course, he did all the caricatures where, you know, he was trying to stop his mouth from saying it, his mouth would say the truth anyway. And you can see that the environment is different when you adhere to the truth. But this is one of the actual teachings of yoga, of yam, is be truthful and see how it feels. I was walking down the street in New York a few months ago, and someone just walked up to me and said, "Have you read the book, I forget what it's called, Radical Truthfulness or something like that?" And I said, "No, I haven't," and he just walked away. It was New York. But I was thinking about it afterwards, you know, what does that mean, radical truthfulness? And obviously other people are thinking about it too. How does it align your life in a different way in your consciousness when you commit yourself to the truth? So that's one of the processes actually listed in this yoga treatise, is to be truthful. It's called satyam, just tell the truth. And the second one is that it should be pleasing. Your speech should be pleasing. So there's a phrase, mukhya prasadad in Sanskrit, and it relates to the fact that whatever we have in our heart comes out through our speech. And we project a kind of vibration out into the world according to the state that we're in. So on one side, I'll get to that side in a minute, how we can be harmful with our speech. But on the side, when your heart is pure and clean and you're living in integrity, when you speak, there's a certain kind of potency that you have. There's a story about Gandhi, and a woman brought her son to him for counsel and said, "You know, my son is out of control. He eats sweets all day long, and he doesn't listen to me, that he shouldn't eat so many sweets." So he said, "You come back in 2 weeks." So the woman brought her son back in 2 weeks and sat him down, and Gandhi said, "So you please don't eat sweets so much." The kid said, "Okay." And the woman said to him privately, "Why did you have to wait 2 weeks?" He said, "2 weeks ago I was eating a lot of sweets, so I couldn't say anything." And so the nature of our speech really is actually bringing out what's in our heart. The vibration actually touches others. So this concept, mukhya prasadad, it means when your heart is clean and actually you want to do good for others and you speak, that it has a powerful effect on people. It actually, they can feel it. They can feel that you're benevolent, that you want to do something good for them. And then, of course, in pleasing speech, this isn't from the Bhagavad Gita, but it's a concept that I've read about and I practice myself. And I find it to be very effective in pleasing speech, and that's nonviolent communication. Have you heard of NVC? There's several books written about it. And it's a way of communicating with people in all kinds of circumstances in which you don't ascribe motive to their activities, because that's actually what gets people really disturbed with you. But you note what actually happened in the situation. You can be straightforward with people and say, you know, I know you didn't mean to, but when you slammed the door, that it knocked over all my stuff, and it made me feel like you're angry, and it disturbed me. And again, I started with saying, I know you didn't mean to, but in describing it, in talking to them, without ascribing this motivation that you meant to do this, you wanted to disturb me, then it's miraculous the different effect that it has when you bring up a sticky situation to somebody and you're able to communicate it and resolve the situation without any residue at the end. Have you had experience with nonviolent communication using it? And working with your kids?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot, but I've read it. It's a really cool topic.
Yeah. Yeah. And anybody else familiar? It's worth a read. I haven't studied it extensively, but just the parts that I've studied have been extremely helpful as a tool in using in all kinds of circumstances as far as maintaining positive speech. So this is one of the aspects of yoga that keeps the consciousness clean. And the next is avoiding speech that offends. So this idea that whatever we have in our heart, if, for instance, if you have envy or malice towards somebody and you speak words, it acts like a spear. It actually can puncture somebody and do great harm to them. Although it's a very subtle thing, speech, the intention comes out of your heart and it hits them and it can do injury. And also, one of the forms of a speech that can be very destructive is gossip. It's called Gramya Kata in Sanskrit. So Gramya means the village, and Kata means speech. So it's kind of the speech of the village when everyone's hanging out. It's like, hey, what happened to his house? You know, it's like, who knows? And you go on with this kind of talking behind people's back, gossiping about them. And this is also destructive. For instance, have you ever heard a warning, don't talk behind somebody's back? This is a good rule to follow, because what happens if you talk behind somebody's back, the person you're talking to, when they walk away, they're thinking, now that guy's probably talking about me. And it becomes very convoluted. So this purity or austerity of speech, being careful, not talking about people behind their back. And finally, in the austerity of speech, you know, purifying the tongue, repeating a sacred mantra. So there are phrases, sound vibrations that are inherently spiritual. And when you repeat them, then it naturally raises the consciousness to a higher level. And this is one of the practices of yoga, is to become to tune oneself, one's mind, with the sound of the mantra. And when you repeat the mantra, it actually has its own power and it carries your consciousness upward and helps you to rise above the sea of thoughts that we're sometimes drowning in. That's why the word mantra, it means actually, man means mind and tra means to deliver. So you can deliver yourself from the tyranny of thought through the mantra, you can rise above it. How many of you are familiar with mantra? Tried it before? Yeah, many of you. So one of the famous mantras of the world is one-syllable mantra, and it's Om. Have any of you heard of Om before? Om, yeah. So Om is a seed mantra, and it's like a spiritual seed. Within the mantra itself, there is spiritual power. So when you say the mantra and just feel the vibration, then and listen to the sound, you'll feel that your mind is carried above the cares and worries, carries cares and worries that take place at a lower level of consciousness. Would you like to try that? Say yes. Okay. So this is an easy mantra. The mantra is pronounced Aum. Try that. Aum. And generally when you chant this mantra, you draw it out. And so we'll say it over a few seconds. And so you can just follow me, and I'll try to pick a tone that you can all join in with. But if you can't match with the tone, just do the best you can. And if you'd like to, close your eyes and sit up a little straight. Helps to focus the mind. And with your eyes closed, just take a few natural breaths and notice that you're aware of your breath. You're a little relaxed. And become aware that you're aware for a moment. And if your mind wanders off, bring it back to the pattern of your breath coming inwardly and then outwardly. And as I start to say the mantra, then please join in. Just sit for a minute with your eyes closed and feel to see if the mantra, the vibration, has any effect on your body, your consciousness, your mind. And slowly come back into the room. You can open your eyes. The energy feels a little more serene in here now. Did any of you have any, let me say, what was your experience in chanting Aum? It doesn't have to be profound or anything, or even if it was negative, you can reflect it back. What did you experience? Yes.
Hi. What I experienced was controlling my breath. The more I did it, the deeper my breath went, and I was able to say longer. I was able to feel more at peace.
That's nice. To become, and it's not so easy just to stop at any time and control the mind, but the mantra is a special space that we can get into, and a vibration that actually helps us to come back to the center and feel that peacefulness. Yes. Anybody else? Anything from the mantra? Yes.
You know, being in like a room with a lot of people I don't know, there's a bit of hesitation. But then just when you come out of it, for me, it's like I feel a little bit more connected to everyone here because we were all sharing in on one sound or one experience, as well as it was really relaxing because it is a bit of a vibration. So like I hold a lot of tension here, so afterwards it's kind of like I just fall into my seat a little bit more.
Nice. Yeah, it is, you know, when you come together with a group, it's there can be some hesitation, not sure what other people might be thinking or what the energy is going to be like. But it's kind of a unifying experience through the mantra, through the sound vibration. In fact, there's a practice, an ancient practice of meditation that involves group singing of the mantra. It's called kirtan. And there's a singer that will sing out a mantra. There's many different mantras, some of them that are not one syllable, that they actually loan themselves to singing in a musical way. And then others, after hearing the mantra, will repeat it back. And for instance, last year I was at a gathering in North Carolina at the Art of Living Retreat Center, and there were about 1,500 people and a large auditorium, and there were various singers that came, and they would sing the mantra, and people stayed all day long. Nobody really wanted to leave. It creates a very powerful environment for spiritual awareness, and it has a deep effect. So that's speech also. It's just a different kind of speech. It's particularly directed at a higher level of our chakras, our energy centers within our body, and resonates with those. So this is an example of speech, spiritual speech, deliberately spiritual, that can actually elevate our consciousness. So the theory I put forward today was that to take conscious control over your life, there's a very practical aspect of our lives that we're familiar with that is recommended by many yogic scriptures, and I quoted from three of them that say that the practice of yoga begins with the tongue. I also talked about how the tongue is our rudder. The kind of speech that we use and the way that we speak will direct us in our lives in a particular way. If we want to be more conscious in general and have conscious living, if we attend to our speech, then we'll get there very quickly. We talked about how our word is our bond. Be careful,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Comes back to us. The seeds were planted.
Yeah.
You can see that in kids so much, like they remember.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, there was a couple more points, yeah.
I just need to make the point for another meeting.
But yes.
I think we have a couple of questions coming up as a theme, and it's something I'm working on, so it's really reflected in me as well. How we put into the words what we are thinking at the time. I was very much impacted with a book I recently am listening to. Now the second time, it's called The Radical Acceptance. And it comes from the place of accepting we are human too. Right? The push to drive us to purity and so on, it's a time-taking thing. And just accepting what we're feeling as it is, and having the sacred pause at the moment to understand what it is, just hasn't disappeared at the moment. So given the attention to what's going on inside us and coming to why we are going to say what we are going to and having the understanding and consciousness, just let it drop at the time by itself without putting it into words. It just disappears magically, and to me it happens with a sigh. So you feel it, you acknowledge it, and then there's a deep sigh that follows it. And it's gone. Mm-hmm. There's no need to put it into words or deal with it. Mm-hmm. It feels as a signal to us, in fact, what's going on at the time, and to your point of what it should go into the words or not.
Yes, a very good point. It also is related to being aware of what you're doing before you do it. Because you took the time to actually cultivate this understanding and awareness of what you're saying and how it's important. When you do come to say something, you think about it. There's a gap between the feeling, the urge to say something, and actually saying it, where you consider, you deliberate what's going to be the result of saying this. That's awareness, and that's conscious living. And so much of our life has to do with the words that we speak. So when we become aware of the fact that they're very potent and they're consequential, and then we're more careful about the way we speak, and then deliberate about speaking in other ways, for instance, using mantra in our life, then this brings us to this empowered state. So we're able to get the most out of life. So that's our case. And yes, you have one. Please.
So I have bonding time with my friends.
Yes.
By venting. So I listen to them venting, and I vent, and then I do feel better by venting. And I understand that it's quite negative to share things, but I have to say it, and I want to let it out. And then having that companion who understands me, who listens, it makes me feel better. Like, but then today's lesson makes me want to change it. Like, how can I change, in a way, the practice of venting so that I feel better? Because I want this negative energy out.
Yeah.
But not necessarily I'm spreading it to my friends. I'm just having a bonding time with my friends by relieving the stress.
Yeah. It's a really good point. These get into the subtleties of the whole topic, and it's really important. Actually, this is accounted for in one of the books I mentioned, which is an essentialization of the principles of yoga. And in it, it talks about this very principle you're talking about, venting and revealing one's heart. It's called, in Sanskrit, it's called kuyam apyati prichati. So prichati means sharing, and kuyam means like your heart. Actually, kuyam means a secret place. In Sanskrit, Sanskrit words have different meanings. So guyam can mean cave. It could also mean like a secret place, and also means heart. Because the heart is our secret place. This is where we keep all our real emotions. We don't reveal them to everybody. So this yogic scripture says, guyam apyati kishyati. You should have people in your life that are so close to you that you can actually unburden yourself by revealing what's in your heart. I know some religious traditions have confession, things like that, where you go and it's like, here's what's going on. And so it's a universal principle. We need that. So you have to have a trusted place. So where is it helpful, and where is it maybe crossed the line of some of the things we're talking about? As long as it's you're doing it in a nonviolent way. In other words, it's not doing it in a way that is trying to harm somebody else when you're saying it. You're being objective. You're saying, this is what happened to me. This is what the other person said to me. This is how they made me feel, and so forth, without giving a subjective judgment to what that person's motive was. And that's what makes it benign and allows you to unburden yourself by making these, having this time to vent.
It is really hard.
What's that?
It is really hard to stay objective.
Yes. It is. And it's hard to control speech also. That's why there's such a high value on it. It's a very valuable thing when you find somebody actually who is not only of restrained speech but refined speech, you'll notice, well, this is an unusual person. I mean, you find people, they become popular and people seek their counsel, that they want to hear from them because of the way they speak. If they get up there and they look great, then the stuff coming out of their mouth, you're like, get me out of here. Because, it's sound carries consciousness. What they're saying is actually carrying what's in their heart. So, it's hard. But that's why it's a discipline. And if you become aware, the first thing is awareness. When you become aware, just like she said before she left, she's reading this book and it's making her aware when thoughts come into her mind, do I just express them or not? First step is always awareness. That brings us to a higher level. Don't just do things out of reaction, but do it deliberately. So the word deliberate, first, it's spelled the same way, deliberate, deliberate. pronounced differently, means two different things, but it's got that Libra in it. Libra means the scales, right? So before you go out and do stuff, think about it. Take time for your practice inwardly to think, what do I want? How do I want to end up? What kind of things do I want to say or not say? Weigh it out. And when you've deliberated carefully, then you'll be more deliberate in how you speak. And when you do that, then things start to change. You'll notice it. Because we're creative. Our speech is creative. It creates our environment. It molds our consciousness. We're planting seeds all over the place. We don't even know it. We say things to people and there's a seed planted. Was it a good seed? It really depends what was in our own heart. So becoming aware, this is real. A very subtle but practical aspect of conscious living is our speech. Okay, yes. Thank you so much.
You.
It's been a pleasure.
There's another book called The Four Agreements.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
It is awesome. It's amazing. The Four Agreements are, first, your speech should be impeccable. This is the last thing I'll say. Speech should be impeccable. Second is, never assume anything. Don't think that you know what's going on. To ask yourself, is this really the truth? The other is, don't take anything personally. And the last one is, always do your best. And your best can be different in different circumstances, right? I'm with you on this one. I found it in the library one day about 10 years ago. I was like, this is fantastic. I recommend that book. It's called Four Agreements. It's a tiny little book, but it has these four principles that relate. First one is about speech. Your speech must be impeccable. The word impeccable comes from Latin, impeciere, which means sinless. So be careful how you speak, because it has an impact. Thank you for taking your valuable time. And oftentimes after this...
Natteri Armarman, Natteri Armarman, Natteri Armarman, Natteri Armarman, Natteri Armarman, Natteri Armarman.